You wish to see me?
Speak.
Oh, you want me to start talking? Well, how about that? One of the things that most of us have difficulty in is following the program. We have difficulty in following the program because we get our signals crossed. Whenever Ellen is ready on the encoder, the computer, to send the message out over the wireless, she raises her finger and says, "Go." And so then I go and I begin talking. But today, Ellen was doing a lot of recapitulation with the tapes, with the encoder, with the tape maker, with all these other little goodies. And I thought she was having difficulty doing it, and she wanted me to come over and help her to do it right. But instead, she had achieved the goal herself and was ready for me to start talking. So she pointed to me, and I misunderstood the signal, so I didn't start talking right away. When we understand the signals, when we understand the program, and we follow the program, everything works out just beautifully. When we don't follow the program, we have problems. Here on campus, we have a very definite program, and we follow the program to the letter. 5 minutes before each new activity begins, we have closed off the other activity, and we're getting ready to start the new activity. We don't wait until the instant the new activity is supposed to start that we start it. We're prepared for it. Why do we do that? Well, we do that for a simple reason. It's training. It's mastership. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone came to a meeting before the meeting started? Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone came to church before the church started? I've been a choir director in many churches for many years, and in this project, many of our rehearsals were a little delinquent. People would come in late, they'd finish their dinner, they'd rush home from work, and they'd grab a sandwich, and then they'd come down to rehearsal, or they'd take their kids and they'd put them in the nursery and they'd come into the rehearsal room, or whatever they would do, but they'd come late. Now, why did they come late? Because they didn't follow the program. Well, Herb, what's so important about the program of the choir? Well, you see, it's not the choir program. It's the program of their life. If they would leave their office on time, have their work finished 5 minutes before they're ready to leave the office so that they can close up 5 minutes before they do anything, whatever their job may be, whether it's a gardener or whether it's a landscaper, whether it's a builder, or whether it's a contractor, whether it's a laborer, or whether it's a scrub person, it makes no difference. When it's time to quit, you quit. You gauge your work so that whatever your work is, you're able to complete it at that time. Then you can go on to your next task. Your wife is waiting for you at home. You normally catch a certain bus, and that bus gets you at home, so you're in time to have dinner. And if you miss the bus, then you miss the dinner, then you miss your wife, and you miss all sorts of things. What happened? I missed the bus. Why did you miss the bus? Well, I was slow closing up my desk. Why did you miss the bus? Well, I didn't put my tools away, and they locked the box before I got a chance, and I had to go and get somebody to open the box, put my tools in there. Well, why did you do that so foolishly? Why didn't you follow the program? Well, all of us run into this from time to time. We say, well, why is the campus program so tough? The campus program's not tough. The campus program has one thing that your program in life does not have. The campus expects you to follow your program. Life doesn't expect you to follow the program. I missed the bus. Oh, okay, I understand. Why did you miss the bus? Because I was late, because I didn't do this. You see, if you follow the program each step of the way, you won't miss the bus. You won't have to make excuses. Your excuse might be, sorry I'm so early, but I'm also always so orderly. I like to be early rather than late. I like to be on time. Well, now, you're invited to a person's house for dinner at 6 o'clock. And so it's now 5:30, and you're almost at their house. So instead of going to their house and being early and messing them up while they're trying to put their hair in order and get the table all set, the last minute little goodies before you get there at 6, you stop at the drugstore and pick up a magazine. You sit in the park bench in the nearby park and you watch the birds for a while, watching your watch, so you give yourself time to get there on time, not too early and not ever late. But you see, you haven't learned that. You haven't learned respect for yourself. How would you like it if you were coming home from work and you're going to have a party at your house and you wanted to have everything ready? How would you like it if everybody came early? Ellen was telling us about Vesna Kuttner. She's one of our students in Brooklyn. Well, Vesna is a nurse, and she goes to work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And she comes home at midnight or later, probably 2 or 3 in the morning, and then she gets a little sleep, and then she gets up and takes care of her household. Well, she was planning a party. She invited us all over to her house. She not only planned a party, she planned a party for 8 or 10 people that we were, and we were all sitting around her living room. Her bedroom's here and her kitchen is here, and she had all of the food prepared to pop into the microwave just to reheat it a little bit, and everything was magnificent. The salad was fresh and crisp. Everything, the serving, the cutlery, everything was done just to perfection. And she had her daughter there, but she had to tell her daughter what to do. Her daughter followed directions happily. But she arranged the house. She got everything ready. She got the house looking spick and span, which is probably how it usually looks. And she had everything in order. And when the people came in, she greeted each one. Even though she had duties to do in the kitchen and things to do here, she greeted each one like a long-lost relative and said, come, make yourself. And she sat in the living room with us before our talk started. She made everyone feel at home. And then she led the discussion. She was having a group of people come to her house to talk to me, and she knew that she'd have to have questions. Because otherwise, why come? I could give a lecture, but that's not like having a talk together. So she asked questions, and the others were inspired by her questions, and they asked questions. And then, at maybe 10 minutes before we were to eat, she said, will you excuse me for a few minutes while I go in the kitchen? And she went into the kitchen. She microwaved the chicken legs and all the other good things that she had for us, and she had her daughter helping there put the salad on the plate. In 10 minutes, she served 8 people a very sumptuous lunch. And then afterwards, after we'd finished eating and we're sitting there chatting about general things, she and her daughter carried all the dishes in the kitchen, no dishwasher, and they washed them all by hand, put them all away. The kitchen was spotless and sparkling, all in another 10 minutes. And then she came back in, and she joined us for a little more conversation, and then it was 10 minutes to 3. And she said, I must prepare myself to go to work now. And so we were just waiting for our cabs and waiting for our rides, and so we were in her bedroom. And she was behind us while we were looking out the window waiting for the cab, and she changed her clothing, and we never even noticed what she was doing. We had no idea, because she did it so unceremoniously. She did it so as though she were invisible, and she was. She was invisible to us. We didn't know what she was doing. And when we turned around, wow, you look great. You know, she looked great before, but, you know, here she was getting ready to go to work as a nurse. And so she did everything she had to do, and then at the exact time to leave, our cabs came. We left, and the house emptied out. She locked the door, and she went to work. Now, how many of us could be so organized? How many of us could have our life in order to follow the rules? The rules are whatever you establish for yourself. And she established a lot of very beautiful rules for herself, and she carried them out very beautiful. And unobtrusively, she carried them out without putting on a big show, saying, now let's do this, now let's do this, this, this. She just slipped as a radio announcer might move a segue from one music type to another music type, from one talk show to another music type show, or anything else. The segue was so beautifully done by her that we didn't even know it was happening. Here on campus, we learn to follow directions. And some people rebel at the directions. They say, oh, we don't have time to get there. We don't have time to do it. We don't have time to do that. Make it. Make the time. You'd be surprised. You can. You can stop a little earlier so that you have time to do it. If these two women, primarily Vesta, could go into their kitchen and clean up after serving 8 people a very sumptuous meal, put all of the leftovers away in the refrigerator, clean up the table, clean up every dish, clean up the knives and forks, put the napkins in the trash and do different things. Everything, so in 10 minutes, without rushing, they just did it as a symphony would be done. But no, we complain. We say, we don't have time to get to the swimming pool. We don't have time to get to the meditation. We don't have time. You don't have time? 5 minutes before you go to your next activity, close down and get down. If you need 10 minutes, then close down 10 minutes before. But before you go to each activity, take the time that's necessary to prepare yourself to get down there and do it. Now, you say, well, Herb, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. That may be true. I am the sharer, and I work on a little different program. I said to Ellen, please set up our program in New York, New Jersey, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, and wherever we were. I said, set up the program. So Ellen sits on the phone for almost a month, off and on, talking to the people, determining when we're going to do this. I said, Ellen, what have you set up? I'll tell you when I got it all ready. And so we had it all ready. And then we wrote it down. I said, now this is not all final. Thanks a lot. We get on the airplane and we leave here. And I said, well, what flight are we going on? Well, we're going on Delta. Thank you very much. And what's the number of the flight? 1985. Okay, fine. Now, where does it leave from San Diego? What time? And so she told me these things just as we were doing it. But I dedicated myself from the time that we were ready to go until the time we came back to following the program. Now, the program was not Herb Byerly. The program was Ellen Jeromini. She was the director of the program. She set it up, and I'm delighted she set it up. I wouldn't want to have to worry about setting up all those things. I did that for years. And she did it, and I'm happy. But if I did not follow the program, it would have been a mess. As it was, we had some pretty tight schedules. But we had a wonderful program. We went from place to place, from house to house, from organization to organization, from church to church, just like clockwork. And I told Ellen, if anybody doesn't show, we call a cab. We will not go and be late just because someone had trouble getting to us. We had a young man who wanted to be helpful to us, one of our students, and he kept getting lost. Every time we did something, he'd get lost. And I'd say, now, why are you getting lost like this? He said, well, I got the wrong directions. I got this. No, you're getting lost because you don't want to follow directions. You are confused. You're not wanting to follow directions because we would say things to him and he wouldn't instantly do them. And so meanwhile, we'd cross the street we were supposed to turn on, and then to get back on that street, which is a one-way street, you had to go around here and around there. Like when we're driving, and Ellen says to any of you, put your seatbelt on. And if you don't put your seatbelt on, there's a penalty to pay. There's a big penalty to pay. And she says, stop here or turn there or do this, and you don't do it, there's a big penalty to pay. And you say, what penalty? Well, in your own consciousness, you know that you have not paid attention to the rules, and so you feel bad. And then you compound this feeling bad by doing other dumb things, and then you feel badder. And pretty soon you feel badder and badder and badder, and you feel worst. And pretty soon you just have blow up. We do that. It's a silly thing, but we do that. And that's nature's way of giving us a little pressure cooker outlet. When we get too much, and that's okay. But in the process, we could burn our wrist, burn ourselves on that steam. We don't want to do that. We want to learn to follow the rules, learn to follow the program. Alan says, go speak to this church. I got you set here. I got you set here. I got you set here and set here and set here. And I said, super. Well, Alan has to get up and say to the people, thank you very much. We have to leave now. You've been very wonderful. Well, we've got a banquet for you. I'm sorry, we have to be at this other church. Dr. Barley had many things to share with you, and the sharing with you was the banquet. And that was our great joy. And so then we just hug everybody and go. But we don't do that. We stay for the banquet. We stay for the sharing, which is so lovingly done. We stay for the, and we should inform these people ahead of time that that cannot be for us because we have to fit the programs in when we have them tightly together. But this is part of the management that Ellen has to learn how to do. And one day she'll learn how to do it. You see, if Ellen were there alone, then she would follow her own program, and then she'd be late on her own, and that'd be okay. But when she's got me there, then I have no program except to follow what Ellen asked me to do at the moment she asked me to do it. And so when Ellen says, stop talking, I generally stop talking. She says, stop eating, I stop eating. She says, let's go now, I say, okay, we go now. But you see, I too follow the program. And when I don't follow the program, everyone's followed up. Everyone. We were at Kennard Davis's coronation as he received his doctoral degree. And I tell you, it was a show to end all shows. We're going to have a videotape, but they're going to send it to us. We'll see it and send it back to them. But fabulous. Utterly fabulous. And I always, whenever possible, like to be the last person on the program. I don't mind speaking in the middle of the program and giving a talk or something, but I always like to close the program, because I like to close the program tying together the loose end. Say what you're going to say it, and say what you said. I like to tie the end of the program together by saying what was said during the program. What was its purpose? What was its direction? And what was it the people were expecting to get out of it, and what did they get? And so Ellen arranged that we were the last on the program. And so I gave a farewell talk to the group in very powerful terms about not worshiping their new doctored minister that they have, being careful not to give him a big head, and in that process killing him. And the people thought, oh, yes. But they all worship him because he is so worshipful and he is a super guy. Now, basically, he is sound. Basically, he could handle it very well. But sometimes the requirements that are placed upon us get to be pretty heavy. And when the requirements get to be pretty heavy, we get to thinking we're sorry for ourselves. And the minute we're sorry for ourselves, when anyone starts to worship us or blow us up, we lose all perspective. And we begin acting as though we are superior to everybody else. And in that process, our growth spiritually takes a big leap backwards, if you can say that. And we don't want that to happen. So I gave the finale, and after I gave the finale, then others got up and talked. I thought I had finished it, but no. And what did they say? They brought it right back down to the standard base. And it's lovely. It's their show. I did mine as best I could. We always do ours as best we can. And if somebody else wants to treat it a little differently, we let him. But be very careful. Be very careful that you, because you're so wonderful and because you're monks here at the monastery, that you don't get a big head. Because if you ever get a big head, your spiritual growth takes a dive beyond anything you can imagine. I want to say this in closing here. Lucifer, in the Bible, is thought of as the devil, and he is the devil. Lucifer was evil personified, according to what people say. Actually, he was merely not following what God asked him to do according to the Bible. Now, I want you to stop and think. Lucifer didn't follow the program. And he became the personification of evil. But who was Lucifer? Lucifer was a fallen angel. He was an angel who fell from the good graces of the divine because he didn't follow the rules. Lucifer did not follow the rules that the Bible set forth for him, that God set forth for him, that he set forth for himself. And because he did not follow the rules, he thought, all right then, if they want to chase me out of the flock, I'll show them, I'll be mean to them. Remember how Fletcher Lynn Siegel spoke to Jonathan and himself after he had been abandoned by the flock for doing low dives and glides and so forth, just as Jonathan had been. I'll show them. Well, you see, Lucifer didn't have a Jonathan to come by and bring him balance again. But Fletcher Lynn Siegel, he had Jonathan to come by and give him balance. And you have me to come by and give you balance if you want it. And I'm ready to share it with you because I love you all so much. And I see everyone in my world fabulous right now. I love you. Have a wonderful day.